This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, May 10th, 2011. I'm Kyle Gellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ahead on Ozarks, the cicadas are coming, the alpacas are here, and the animals of Jungle Book will be on stage soon.
This edition of Ozarks begins with Ropi Brock, the editor and publisher of TalkBusiness.net. Ropi is on the phone from Little Rock. Welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Always good to be with you, Kyle.
Tomorrow, you're going to sit down with Governor Mike Beebe for a post-session conversation, and you're not going to be the only one coming up with the questions, are you?
For the first time in a while, I hope I'm not. I hope I don't get to ask a single question of my own. We're launching a new initiative. It's called Talk Politics Live, and it's basically people's chance, citizens' chance to ask the governor a direct question, much like you would with a radio call-in show, much like you would if there was a town hall forum in your neighborhood. Except we're going to do all of this through some of the new social media tools that are out there, Twitter and Facebook, and through our live chat room via Ustream. You can watch it all on the Internet. You can participate through the Internet in all those different platforms.
If someone has a question for the governor, it's not too early now to submit that question?
Absolutely. We would love to get your questions in advance just so we can organize it a little bit more. He's not going to know any of the questions in advance, but it can be anything. You might have a policy question for the governor. You might have something involving government services that you need a question answered about. Maybe it's child support or something like that. Or we've gotten a couple of just interesting personal questions already for the governor that I look forward to throwing him a curveball here. I'm going to moderate the session, so if we get 20 questions on one topic, we can definitely just kind of combine them a little bit. But I'd love to call a person's name out and say, this person from Northwest Arkansas has a question for you, Governor. Here's the question. Easy to do. You can go to talkbusiness.net, and you'll see in the bottom half of our website the Talk Politics section. If you click on it, it'll take you to a submission form. You can basically just fill that out. It takes about 30 seconds and submit your question. Or you can email me at Ropi@talkbusiness.net or access me through Twitter or Facebook and send your questions to me through a message.
This will be streamed live so people can watch the interaction live.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Ustream is the video service that we're using. It's a free service that's out there. There's a bunch of them. But, we'll have cameras kind of set up, and you'll be able to see the whole thing going on all in real time, just kind of like you were in the TV station or a radio station watching someone be interviewed. And, again, we'll have the ability to not only have hopefully some questions in advance so that we can be prepared to ask him some things, but, we may take the conversation a little in some different directions based on some feedback we're getting as we see some comments coming in, or maybe somebody has a follow-up question they want worked in through the chat room, and we'll definitely be ready, able, and nimble to do that if we need to.
You plan to sit down with the governor about a half dozen times throughout the course of a year?
Yeah, we're going to try to do this about every other month, maybe every 6 weeks or so with him, there's so much that goes on in state government, and people have so many questions, and things develop so quickly in state government, and it's easier to kind of access the governor on a timely basis to ask him questions about things that are changing. It moves a little slower at the federal level, as people see. It takes a little bit longer to get legislation through or to policy worked out, but we'll sit down with those congressional officials throughout the year too.
Tomorrow morning at 10, and if people want to watch, again, they go to talkbusiness.net.
That is the easiest way to do it. We've just tried to make it as simple as possible, so it's basically just a click of the button, and I think you've got to log in basically with your email address, and that's about it. So it's not any more complicated than that.
All right, Ropi, thank you very much.
All right, Kyle, looking forward to talking to you soon.
And if you are unable to view or participate in tomorrow's live question and answer session with the governor, you can hear highlights tomorrow at noon on Ozarks at Large.
Thank you.
Within a few weeks, much of Arkansas will be buzzing with the sound of cicadas. But these are not the typical brood you see flying clumsily around your flower gardens. These are periodical cicadas. And the summer of 2011 marks the insect's 13-year emergence. The last time they descended was in 1998, a very loud year. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Giant Goliath beetles and other creepy dead insects cover a laboratory table in the old agriculture building on the University of Arkansas campus. We're in the Anthropod Museum. Anthropods are invertebrate creatures. They don't have backbones, with an exoskeleton, segmented bodies, and jointed appendages, including insects, spiders, centipedes, and shellfish. Jeff Barnes curates the museum.
We have a collection of about 750,000 specimens of insects from all over Arkansas and some from other parts of the world as well. They're primarily used for research and teaching. We also have some displays that our graduate students take out to the schools for educational programs. And we take them to our every other year insect festival as well, usually held here in Fayetteville in October.
Next to Barnes are stacks of glass-encased birchwood boxes filled with the deceased cicadas.
Well, this glass-topped drawer contains approximately 100 specimens of what we call magi cicada. These are the periodical cicadas that will be appearing shortly, within a couple of weeks. These guys are very distinctive. They don't look at all like the annual dog day cicadas. They're about an inch to an inch and a half long, primarily black, but in fresh specimens, the eyes are bright orange-red color. And the wings also have a bright orange, reddish color on the wing veins. So they're very distinctive. These guys will start to disappear probably late June, early July. And then they will be followed by what we call the dog day cicadas, the genus Tibbison. These are the ones that you hear during the very hot days of July and August every year. But the periodical cicadas only come out every 13 years.
Certain northern broods have a 17-year life cycle. And unlike wasps, flies, mosquitoes, and those awful ticks, you don't really see cicadas very much.
They spend most of their lives as nymphs underground, perhaps up to 10 or 12 inches underground, feeding on tree roots. Now, tree root sap is very non-nutritious, so they have these extremely long life cycles in order to make up for the lack of good nutrition. On the 13th year, the mature nymph digs its way to the surface, crawls out, finds maybe a leaf or a tree trunk, and then the adult emerges from the last nymphal skin and leaves that skin behind.
Tiny little bug exoskeletons will soon litter the forest floor and perhaps your yard. Nymphs, sometimes in huge populations, leave their burrows at sunset and molt. These young adults are mostly white. They climb toward the tops of trees to locate sunny spots and darken as their exoskeletons harden. Males then course to locate females.
Now, some of the broods have apparently gone extinct from human activities such as paving or plowing, removing trees. The trees, of course, are the food source for the nymphs. So if the trees are gone, the nymphs will die.
Cicada's ecological role is not really apparent, considered mostly a nuisance to humans. But to certain wildlife, they're like candy.
Of course, when the cicadas come to the surface and the adults emerge, there's a sudden pulse of a huge amount of food for predators. Things like copperhead snakes just love the cicadas that are freshly emerging from the ground. And of course, birds would enjoy them too. But the theory about these huge emergences is that there's so much food that the predators become satiated very early on in the emergence. So there's always a portion of the population left that can reproduce for the next 13-year cycle.
Cold spring rains have kept temperatures unseasonably low this spring, delaying emergence, but it'll be evident in coming weeks.
When the emergence really gets going, primarily in forested areas, the male choruses can be extremely loud. I've read reports where the decibel level is even higher than a jet plane going overhead. They can be extremely loud. I've also read reports where certain researchers studying periodical cicadas had to limit themselves to 20 to 30 minutes in the forest. Otherwise, they just go crazy listening to this extremely loud sound. Of course, the purpose of the male singing is to attract females. And they sing in unison, and in these very distinctive songs for each species. Each brood has 3 to 4 species in it, and each of those species has a distinctive song, male song.
Calling and courting songs of the Major Cicada tretisson. We've not heard this sound since the summer of 1998. Male periodical cicadas produce songs using a pair of timbals or ridged membranes on the first abdominal segment, which is hollow and resonant. They collectively pause even, which conveys a sort of mechanical sound. Despite the noise, cicadas don't bite or sting, nor do they damage forests, although they can harm delicate young fruit and nursery trees.
The adults will take some sap from twigs and leaves, but their feeding apparently causes no damage. Now, their oviposition behavior, their egg-laying behavior, does cause significant damage, particularly to fruit trees. The females have very sharp, sword-like ovipositors that they use to slash the tips of twigs, and then they lay their eggs inside, deep in the tissues where they've slashed the twigs, and that frequently will weaken the twig and cause it to break and stay on the tree, a condition called flagging, or just break off completely from the tree. The amount of damage will depend upon how many cicadas there are in that particular area. Fruit tree growers probably will not enjoy having the periodical cicadas around. The cicadas will also lay their eggs in oak trees and, you know, the wild vegetation. There would be no significant damage there, I don't suspect. By the way, there have been estimates from some people that in certain areas as many as 1.5 million cicadas per acre emerge. So that's a pretty incredible number.
Jeff Barnes suggests earplugs if you're out in the forest for any significant amount of time.
The upcoming emergence is referred to as Brood 19. It's also called the Great Southern Brood. It covers most of the southeastern United States except for Florida. It will cover the entire state of Arkansas. Now, not necessarily every spot within Arkansas. It'll be fairly patchy. It'll be mostly in areas where there are mature forests. The emergence has already started in Arkansas, down in Sevier County and Ashley County. Reports have come out just within the last day or two. So I suspect in a couple more weeks, our soil temperatures up here will get warm enough in order to allow the emergence to happen.
But be warned, it ain't over. We also have brood 23 of the 13-year periodical cicada in the wings.
Arkansas also has brood 23 of the 13-year periodical cicada. The next time that will emerge will be in 2015. It's a much smaller brood than the one we're going to experience this year, and it's primarily in the western part of the state. It's the Mississippi River brood.
Don't worry, the cacophony won't last too long. By August, it will be replaced by the annual Dog Day cicadas. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Zeke, a white Great Pyrenees, barks at his owners as they unlock the gate to the pasture he is guarding. He's not angry with them. He's simply doing his job of protecting his herd of alpacas. Jane Dula is the owner of a farm in Elkins called Land of Green Ginger Alpacas. She and her family got Zeke to guard their animals after moving to the area last December.
We had seen an ad on TV. They used to have the ad on TVs for alpacas. And I had seen them about 5 years previous to that in Peru. I went to Peru with a group of college students. I went back to college late in life. And I'd seen them out there and fallen in love with them. So when I saw the ad, I got really interested and started looking into it. And then we realized that we could actually, you know, actually have a reasonably good-sized farm with the small amount of acreage that we had, because they were saying you could have 10 alpacas to an acre. They're fully insurable, and that they're a good investment, that there are a lot of tax benefits from owning them. And so we decided to get a couple and see how we liked it. So we started off with two pregnant females. In fact, our very first alpaca, who's now 15 years old, had a baby yesterday. She's still having crias for us. Baby alpaca is called a cria, C-R-I-A. And she had a beautiful little baby boy for us yesterday. She's 15 years old, so we've more than got our money's worth from her. We've had seven or eight babies from her.
Originally from England, Dula met her husband in Florida, and they ran an alpaca farm there for about 7 years. When they moved to the Ozarks, they brought the entire farm, all 60 animals, as well as their family and their pets. 6 dogs, 3 birds, 3 cats, and 7 people. They also brought along the name of their farm.
The money that went into buying and starting our business, our alpaca business, came from a building that had been owned by my parents for many, many years. My father had a successful real estate business in England, and it was on one of the oldest streets. It was an old tannery building, and the street was called Land of Green Ginger. And we sold that property to put the money into the business, and it had been a very lucky building for us, so we wanted to continue that look and name it after Land of Green Ginger.
Alpacas are native to South America, but they were imported to the United States in the early 1980s. Their lifespan is about 20 years, and their gestation period is about 11 and a half months. There are 2 types of alpacas, the Wakaya and the Suri.
Most people are familiar with the Wakaya, but those are like the fluffy teddy bear type. The Suris have long, lustrous, silky locks, and if they're not sheared, they grow like dreadlocks all the way down to the ground. They're the rarest of alpacas, and I've checked in Arkansas, there aren't very many alpaca farms at all, and the ones that I have found, they don't breed Suris, so I think we're the only, can't say for sure, but I think we're the only Suri breeders.
Dula has both types of alpacas on her farm, and she says the animals are typically raised for their fiber.
Their fiber is softer than cashmere. It's stronger, 4 times stronger than sheep's wool. It's hypoallergenic. There's no lanolin in the fiber, so you don't have to use any chemicals to process it. And it doesn't have that prickly feel that wool has. So a lot of people that are allergic to wool can wear alpaca next to their skin. And they've been raised for that for thousands of years, for the fiber. In fact, in Peru, they used to call it the fiber of the gods, because only royalty could wear alpaca. And so that's what they're raised for, the fiber. Now, in Peru and Chile and Bolivia, they do actually use them for meat as well, but not here in the United States.
Tucked away on a hill in Madison County, about 25 acres of the farm is fenced. In addition to producing fiber, Dula also sells the alpacas and helps other people set up their own farms. She says it doesn't end with the sale. They try to guide others through the whole process and help make them successful.
I mean, the main money at the moment in the business is in breeding and helping other people set up farms. We're a breeding farm. There aren't enough alpacas even now in the whole of the United States to have a mill working full-time processing alpaca fiber, and until there is, most of the fiber is processed in small mills at the moment. But eventually the vision is that there'll be farms with 100 acres that have 1,000 animals that are purely bred for fiber only, not for breeding stock, and that's going to be the future of the industry. But we do use all our fiber. I never spun. I could never spin before I got alpacas. I've learned to felt and needle felt, process all my own wool. I don't process every little bit of it because I have too much now. We're getting more and more animals. We've got 60 animals, so what's left goes to a mill and is processed into yarn and sold to stores.
The alpacas are very low maintenance for their owners. Dula says the animals are quite efficient with their food, and during the winter, she only needed about a bale and a half of hay a day to feed 60 animals.
There is a special alpaca chow, if you like you've got dog chow and horse chow, which is pellets, and we give about a pound of that a day per animal in the winter. Now, with the summer pasture, we're not even giving pellets anymore. We're not giving the supplement. We're just giving them minerals at this point because they can sustain themselves on the pasture that we have. They have two toes. They're from the camelid family. They're related to camels and llamas. They're about half the size of a llama. A llama can get to about 300 pounds. They get to about 150 pounds. They have the two toes with pads on the bottom, so they don't tear up the land, like a horse would and such. The toes need trimming occasionally, so that's some maintenance. You also have to trim the teeth as well, if they need it. Not all of the animals need it. We just usually trim once a year when we shear them. They usually get the toenails trimmed, the teeth trimmed, and they get their annual shots all at the same time. So your daily maintenance with the animals is basically make sure they've got fresh, clean water. If it's in the winter, you would give them their pellets, their feed. And that's basically it on a daily basis. You need to worm them, obviously, like any animal, they're wormed.
They also need to be sheared about once a year. Dula says most alpaca farm owners use professional shearers. Lucky for her, her son is a trained shearer.
He went for training and he apprenticed with one of the best shearers in the country. He now has his own business, so my other son is shearing with him this year. They're shearing in the United States, and then he has 1,000 animals to do in Germany. He is shearing in Italy and France, and also in England. So he makes enough money in 4 months in shearing for the whole year. And he's young, and he just backpacks most of the rest of the year. He travels the world, so he has a good life. But when he shears, it's very hard work. I mean, they're shearing every single day. He'll shear 40 to 50 animals a day.
In addition to producing fiber, alpacas can also participate in shows. Dula explains that the more awards alpacas win at these shows, the more valuable they can become. For example, she recalls a male alpaca being sold at auction for about $460,000, and his breeding fee was set at $10,000.
A lot of people prepare their animals for the show, and they will wash them. But not with, you can't use anything that enhances the luster. If they feel, they can tell when they look at the fiber if you've used anything that's to increase the shine. Because they're judged on the luster of their fiber and the length and the fineness and everything else. So when you put an alpaca into an alpaca show, they're not just judging them for the conformation. They're also judging for the fiber, the fineness of the fiber, the density. How much fiber is on the animal. In the case of the Wakaya, you're looking at the crimp, which is the little crimps in the fiber. You're also looking at the color to make sure it's consistent throughout the blanket. And they're also then looking at the conformation, nice straight back, good proportions. They look at their bite, the teeth. So it's very competitive. There's a lot of different things that they look at. In the case of the Surrey, they're looking for fineness again, but also and density, but also luster, the shine. Because that's why their fiber is valuable, because of the luster in it.
Some of the items Dula has made from the alpaca's fiber are available at All My Treasures Flea Market in Fayetteville. More information can be found at greengingeralpacas.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. There are fewer than 50 communities in the United States that have been certified as a National Wildlife Federation community habitat. There is a movement to make Fayetteville awarded such a designation before the end of this year. Terry Lane, a member of the City of Fayetteville Environmental Action Committee, says the project is designed to preserve the city's natural habitat 1 yard at a time.
Acknowledging that there really kind of needs to be a paradigm shift in the way that we view and manage our suburban properties. So much habitat has been lost to urbanization or agriculture conversion that there's really not a whole lot left. And what is left of habitat is fragmented. So we're talking about providing some continuity for wildlife in their habitat yard by yard, and that we can shift the way we view our backyards and the properties around our schools and our churches and our businesses, and start to look at those landscapes and ask ourselves, you know, what things can we put into place to better provide for wildlife?
Don't let me put words in your mouth here, but one of the idea perhaps behind the paradigm shift is not everything has to be a manicured.
Absolutely. Yes. So that we've grown accustomed, I think, with our suburban properties to our yard being a square patch of grass, which is often sterile for wildlife. A lot of times it's not even a native, there aren't native grasses. So that's what we're kind of accustomed to seeing. It's a patch of grass that we walk past on our way in and out of the house.
And we mow on Saturday afternoon.
And we mow, and often lawns are sprayed with chemicals and things to keep them green. And I think it's important to note that we're not asking people to rip out their lawns and have a wild-looking, unkept space around their homes. Quite the opposite. This can actually enhance the landscape, reducing some of that lawn space, for example, and adding native plant beds that provide for pollinators and birds, and adding trees. These are the things we're talking about.
Wildlife, again, I think some people think, well, that's elk or that's bear. Wildlife is bees.
Absolutely.
Butterflies.
Yes. Very important part of it is, the base of the food chain are the insects. And when we start to, for example, butterflies, I was just at my daughter's school this morning with a member of our habitat team, Cindy Cope, who's a butterfly expert and native plant expert. And she had brought some monarch caterpillars in for my daughter's classroom to watch them go through metamorphosis. And, as she describes in her programs, people don't really understand that our native insects, bees and butterflies and things, have co-evolved with our native plants. And if they don't have, like the monarch, for example, milkweed, then there's nowhere for the larva to find a food source. There's nowhere for them to lay eggs. So, we're absolutely talking about the insect world, which is the basis of a balanced ecosystem.
The goal here is to make Fayetteville the first community habitat in Arkansas, going through the National Wildlife Federation.
Right.
What has to happen?
The first step was we had to go through a process with National Wildlife Federation to become a registered community habitat, and we achieved that last year. To do that, we had to prove to the National Wildlife Federation that our community was serious about attaining this. So one of the first steps was that we went to the mayor, who was immediately on board and actually has been one of the first homeowners to get property certified. And we also had a resolution passed through our city council stating their support and that they recognized that this would be an important thing for the city to do. And so we laid that groundwork, and now we are working to satisfy a points matrix for the National Wildlife Federation. And that includes, based on the population of our city, we have to have certified a minimum of 200 properties, and that can be homes, schools, churches, businesses, parks, a minimum of 200. And then we also have to satisfy some community outreach goals, volunteer stream cleanups, invasive plant removals, workshops. And once we have satisfied all of those goals, then we will be recognized as a community-wide habitat, which we're hoping to do by the end of the summer.
Oh, That's not that far away.
That's right.
Speaking of December, there is the speaker series as well.
Yes.
And does that go through the summer?
It does go through the summer. There will be 6 presentations throughout the summer. All of them will happen at the Fayetteville Public Library. And we're going to focus on a different topic related to enhancing habitat on our suburban properties. So, yes, that starts Monday, May 23rd. And that speaker series will help satisfy a lot of our education community outreach goals.
Well, if people are very interested in this and want to know more about the speaker series, can they go to someplace on the web?
Yes. Yeah, we have a link actually off of the city's website, and that's habitat.accessfayetteville.org. What we really want folks to do is to look it up, learn about it, and get their yard or their property certified.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Terry Lane is a member of the City of Fayetteville Environmental Action Committee and is an organizer of the effort to have Fayetteville earn status as a National Wildlife Federation community habitat. Further information and online application forms can also be found at the National Wildlife Federation website. That's nwf.org. The first lecture in a summer lecture series in conjunction with the program will take place at the Fayetteville Public Library on May 23rd, and that lecture will provide an overview of the Community Habitat Program. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The University of Arkansas continues preparations for tomorrow's lectures by the Dalai Lama on campus. The university is allowing free parking at the north and east lots adjacent to Baum Stadium on Razorback Drive. Buses will be shuttling people from the lots to Bud Walton Arena beginning at 6 tomorrow morning. Doors for the first session, a panel discussion about nonviolence, will open at 7 a.m. Doors for the second session open at noon. The university says all of those attending will be subject to a security check. No professional cameras or recording devices will be allowed. For people without tickets, the 9:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. appearances will be streamed live by UATV. More information regarding the events may be found at dalailama.uark.edu.
Traffic is again flowing in the eastbound lanes of Interstate 40 in East Arkansas. With flood water receding, highway officials reopened it Monday afternoon. But westbound lanes could remain closed for several more days between Brinkley and Hazen. Tabitha Clark, a hydrologist with the National Weather Service, says it could be a week before water completely goes down.
The Mississippi is extremely high right now, and that's one of the problems we're facing with the White River draining into the Mississippi. And also parts of the Arkansas. So it's southeast Arkansas. The Mississippi is supposed to crest there probably in another week. We're looking at Sunday. So at least through Sunday, it's going to be hard for areas to fall too much.
The White River has crested at the I-40 bridge. It's expected to reach its peak at Clarendon today at 48 feet, which is several feet short of its 1927 record.
Meanwhile, Glenn Bollock with the State Highway Department says the closure of the major trucking route on I-40 for so many days has caused serious disruption.
This is huge, not just for Arkansas. It's a major route for people all across the country. So we've really caused a lot of traffic problems for people.
Highway officials say they still have no estimate on when the westbound lanes of Interstate 40 might be open.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency says people affected by floods should ask for badges when approached by FEMA personnel. The agency said yesterday representatives from FEMA working in 13 Arkansas counties designated as disaster areas should show identification in the form of official laminated photo ID badges. The agency also says FEMA agents and representatives do not accept money or donations.
The Fayetteville Rotary Club has raised more money per member than any other Rotary Club in the country in an effort to immunize the world's population against polio. Rotary International says the Fayetteville Rotarians raised more than $122,000, or about $602 per member, during a spring fundraising effort. Rotary says the money raised will purchase nearly 204,000 polio vaccinations.
The University of Arkansas men's golf team will travel to Ocala, Florida for the NCAA Southeastern Regional this month. The team, ranked 17th in the country, learned its postseason fate last night. 14 teams will play at the regional, and the top 5 will move on to the NCAA championships.
And the University of Arkansas women's tennis team will host one of 16 NCAA regionals this weekend on the UA campus. Arkansas will play Sacramento State Saturday afternoon beginning at 1. If the Razorbacks win that match, they'll face the winner of Clemson-Wichita State on Sunday. And the survivor of the regional will be one of 16 teams nationally to advance to the NCAA championships.
Tuesday, May 10th, 2011. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And joining us now in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
You'll be surprised to know there are things to do tonight.
On a Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or maybe you won't be surprised. 6:30 tonight, a talent showcase of Heritage High School students in Rogers.
Yes.
In their auditorium. It's $1 admission, and the money goes to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Beth Hall promises me there are some gloriously talented children to see.
Excellent.
Also tonight, the Kiev Trio is in concert, part of the Artisphere Festival at the Walton Arts Center. They're playing tonight at 7 at St. Catherine's at Bell Gable in Fayetteville.
A wonderful venue to hear music, but a small one.
Tiny.
So call and make sure you have a ticket.
Call now.
$5.
This very minute, $5. Or they're playing at 6 o'clock tomorrow night at Thorncrown Chapel in Eureka Springs, also beautiful and slightly larger.
Right. But again, call.
And planning ahead for tomorrow. Tomorrow afternoon at the West Fork Library, there's a writing project called 150 Years Ago, My Family Story. It's a community writing workshop focused on preserving memories of the Civil War. Sounds fascinating. It starts at 1 o'clock, and you can find out more at 830-2626.
Do you have any family that you know of in the Civil War?
No. I think we were all either exceptionally peaceful or somewhere else.
Antoinette?
Maybe on my mom's side, but yeah. I don't really know.
It would be fascinating to know, though, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
My great-great-great-grandfather, Gideon Kellums, marched with Sherman to the sea.
Yankee.
Yeah. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And with us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Mark Landon Smith from Arts Live to talk about the next production from Arts Live Theater, which is The Jungle Book.
Which is The Jungle Book, yes. You know, The Jungle Book is very special to me because it was the first movie my parents took me to see in 1972 at the drive-in.
Really?
In Jonesboro, Arkansas, at the Skyview Drive-In. So The Jungle Book has always had a very, very special place in my heart. So,
and that was the animated. Yes,
the Disney version, which is what we're doing. We're doing a shortened version of the Disney film, and it has all your favorite songs in it. I Want to Be Like You and
Bare Necessities.
Yes, so we're looking forward to it. We got 32 kids that are in the cast, and it's going to be at the York Ballroom starting May 19th. It's part of the Artisphere with the Walton Arts Center, so or at least we're listed in their events. So
what I imagine there's some pretty cool costumes.
There are Faye Alter, who is
Say No More.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's a fantastic costumer, and she's doing all of our costumes for us. And we're doing things that are specifically representative of the characters, like for instance, Ka, the snake, which is being played by Haley Self. Instead of having like a snake costume, we have her dressed like an Indian princess who has a snake puppet on one of her hands. And so things are kind of like Julie Taymor with The Lion King, where you can see the actor, but you still see the representation of the animal that they're playing. So, yeah, and Faye Alter's doing a fantastic job, as always.
Now, your cast is probably what ages?
They range in age from 6 to 18. So it's a big range of ages.
Now, there's been a version of The Jungle Book since that animated version, right?
There was a live action version a few years ago, I think.
Okay.
But
have many members of your cast seen the animated version?
They have. And of course, and if they haven't, they all know the songs, especially Bare Necessities is their favorite. But yeah, everyone came into the show very familiar with at least the songs, if not the story itself. And this particular version, there's not a lot of dialogue in it. It's almost completely sung through, which is a big challenge for our actors. But of course, they are stepping up and meeting it.
You know, I've never read the Rudyard Kipling.
I haven't either.
And so I have no idea. My whole basis is that movie.
Mine too. It's kind of like the animated version of Rikki Tikki Tavi. I never read that version, as literature, but that's the only basis I have for that. And the same thing here with The Jungle Book, too.
What about the set?
The set is being done by Z Crump, and if anyone is familiar with her work, she is brilliant. She has Z Studios, or Studio Z, here in Fayetteville. She's an incredible artist, an incredible muralist, and she's been doing our sets this entire season and just does remarkable work. And so we use a recyclable program at Arts Live to where when I look at the season and we start pulling our shows together, we look at it from the perspective of how can we recycle our sets and our costumes as much as possible so we are not reinventing the wheel each time we do something. So, and she's excellent at doing that. So we have a jungle set that's coming up. We're taking the columns that are in the ballroom and making those into palm trees. So it's going to be very environmental, the set itself. So the audience, when they come in, are going to feel like they are in the jungle.
And how long have you guys been rehearsing?
We started rehearsing about 4 weeks ago. So we have about 8 weeks of rehearsal, 7.5 to 8 weeks of rehearsal total. So we start our run-throughs actually next week. So with
such a large cast and kind of a broad age range of actors, is that a bit of a challenge dealing with so many people and then just different ages?
Well, we also have stage managers and assistant directors who help us. And I have Erin Hagar, who's our professional assistant director for this particular show. And she's a tremendous help because I have so much to do in directing the show. It's kind of hard for me to keep an eye on everything. So she's very helpful with that support.
Which is more of a challenge, directing dialogue or directing music?
Neither is more challenging than the other.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's just part of the package. So, no. And especially when you're doing something like Jungle Book, you're not really having to teach the music from scratch. They come in already informed about the music. They had been listening to it. And so it's not as though you're having to teach a completely new song.
Is there any challenge for you when you first start to not hear Phil Harris's voice singing Bare Necessities?
No, not really, because we go into it with a clean slate and letting the kids create their own versions of it, and their own interpretations. I mean, we help them mold it, but we really want them to make it their own and not just be imitating someone else's interpretation. So,
May 19th?
May 19th through the 22nd at the UOC Ballroom. We have shows on Thursday night, May 19th at 7, Friday night at 7, Saturday at 2 o'clock and 7 p.m. And then also we will have a 2 p.m. Sunday show. This is also going to be a part of the Fayetteville Fringe Theater Festival that's being produced by Ceramic Cow, Arts Live, and Theater Squared. So all of that's going to be happening all at the same time. So.
And if people want to know more about Arts Live,
you go to artslivetheater.com. We also have our summer classes coming up. We've got a great slate of summer camps. Every month, we're offering something for grades or ages of 5 to 18 in different sections. So you can go to artslivetheater.com and find out all that information. You can buy tickets online, and also you can download our summer program form.
And don't you usually have a summer production?
We do, and this year we're doing, actually we did a summer production a few years ago of High School Musical, and this year we're doing Fiddler on the Roof, and so we have auditions coming for that in early June. So
Fiddler
on the Roof, which goes up in August. Yeah.
That's ambitious.
It is very ambitious.
I'm not telling you anything you don't know there.
I know, but we're looking forward to it, and we're very excited about bringing it to Fayetteville.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
And it's time for our question. The winner today will receive two tickets to see Arts Live Jungle Book, which opens up on Thursday. Also, two movie passes to any area Malco Theater.
In keeping with our animal theme of the day, today's question will also be about animals, specifically a cat that I heard about yesterday named Smokey. And he is the loudest cat in the world, as dubbed by the Guinness World Book of Records, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is that the correct
Guinness Book of World Records?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So they measured how loud he was, and they said he was about 67 decibels. So what we want to know today is, what is that comparable to? Is it about as loud as a blow dryer, a vacuum cleaner, or a typical conversation?
So this cat purrs loud enough to be equal to one of those, 67
yes.
decibels. And again, that's closest to one of these three items.
Yes. Is it a blow dryer, a vacuum cleaner, or a typical conversation?
If you have a guess, you can call 800-522-5823. 800-522-5823. All correct answers go into the Ceramic Cow. One winner will be pulled out.
Good luck. So for today's trivia question, we asked you, well, we told you about Smokey, this cat in England who has the loudest purr, and it registered at 67 decibels. So what we wanted to know is which of these items is about as loud. Is it a blow dryer, a vacuum cleaner, or a typical conversation?
And so this cat's purr is as loud as?
A vacuum cleaner, which is about 70 decibels.
Blow dryer, about 80. Mm-hmm. Normal conversation, about 60.
Mm-hmm.
So this cat actually purrs louder than what you and I are speaking right now.
That's what they say.
You can go to YouTube, mm-hmm. and put in YouTube, Smokey, loud purring cat, and you can see an ITN, which is a British television network mm-hmm. news report on the cat, and the purr sounds like this. All right, so we will pick a winner out of the ceramic cow
mm-hmm.
for two tickets to Malco Theater and two tickets to Jungle Book that opens up on Thursday.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Bear Creek, Springs, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas.
I'm going to go out on a limb and think there might be somebody else besides me who doesn't know where Bear Creek Springs is.
It's about halfway between Harrison and Prosperity.
Okay, well, that clears it up. Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks, hosting the 16th Annual Greening of the Garden fundraising event, May 12th at 6 p.m. The event will feature cocktails, live and silent auctions, dinner, garden tours, and more. 750-2620 or bgozarks.org for more information. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We'll be back tomorrow at noon with another new edition of Ozarks at Large.
Have a good day.
I'm the king of the swingers, the jungle VIP. I reached the top and have to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I wanna be a man cub, and so ride into town, and be just like the other men. I'm tired of mucking around, so, ooh, I wanna be just like you, I wanna walk like you, talk like you too, you'll see it's true, and ain't like me.